Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Miss something from the Todd Feinberg Show? Don't stress. Listen to the podcast at WTIC.com or on the free Odyssey app.
I'll listen to a bit more. This is Kerry Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy Jr.'s sister, describing sitting in their home in McLean, Virginia, 1968, with the whole family, including Robert F. Kennedy Sr., watching the reaction on TV to the shooting of Martin Luther King in April 1968. And she describes how her father suddenly left the room, hopped in his car and drove off. And 15 minutes later, they saw him on TV in Washington, D.C. And she compares Joe Biden to Bobby Kennedy, who showed his kids that you run towards, as a leader, you run towards the blaze. You run towards the fire.
That was an incredible lesson to me as an 8-year-old child. He showed us that when everyone else is running away from the flames of anguish and despair, leaders run towards them. And that's who Joe Biden is.
And then she credits Joe Biden with all this leadership he's never shown, as if supporting the standard fare of left-wing special interest groups and causes is bravery. And even more ironically, you've got 6 or 8 Kennedy children standing up on the stage endorsing Joe Biden in Philly a couple days ago, acting like they are somehow being courageous. They're somehow running towards the flames when all they're doing is cashing in on their wavering fame in order to bask in the limelight and maintain the loyalty of the Biden administration to the Kennedys and vice versa. It's so pathetic. It's hard to believe that it gets propped up like it's some big political moment. Okay, coming up, we have Mayor Ken Nelson of Enfield here. We're going to talk about the controversy going on in the town. First, though, BPS Lawyers Traffic Center. We've got Mark Christopher with a report. Thank you, sir.
It's Todd Feinberg. It's Todd Feinberg. Monday through Friday, 3 till 6 on WTIC News Talk 1080.
So, Ken Nelson is going to join us now from Enfield. He is the mayor of Enfield. And there was some controversy Monday night because a citizen of the town, a resident of the town, Christina Lang, during the public remarks section of the meeting, made some comments concerning statistics with regard to race and issues surrounding racial bias and such in the public schools. She started it off by saying, "We've uncovered some pretty bad data regarding high arrest rates and potential racial biases in disciplinary actions at Enfield schools. While we continue to explore various data points, and that includes the elevated levels of disciplinary action against students with disabilities, we have 2 other issues that we want to mention." So she goes on to talk about these other issues, and then she makes these remarks right here, which I think were particularly bothersome to Ken. So I'm going to play these and then get Ken on the air to respond. This is just a short clip, but it needs a little description, I think, from Ken.
You're going to need some training and education. You need to have someone implement training, and I'm thinking of the police too, for school staff and police officers in implicit bias, cultural competency, and de-escalation techniques, not just Glocks, to mitigate the disproportionate impact on students of color and students with disabilities. That's sick.
So that's the starting point of this controversy, because afterwards you spoke, Ken, and you said something that has been, I guess, shared in a very short clip to take it out of context and create a little blowback for you. But can you tell us what happened here? Because it's hard to figure out what she's talking about and how this thing blew up so much.
Well, I think the basis of her comments were the fact that we are putting SSOs in the Enfield Public Schools.
Because, school security officers.
Yep. Our top priority is to keep the children and faculty safe in the Enfield school system. Now, obviously, this has become a political problem on both sides of the aisle. But the Board of Education, due to the high cost of special needs, another word for it is high needs, the Board of Education had no choice but to cut the current security program completely out of their budget. So the town council had nothing to do with that. It was a Board of Education decision. And as a council member, I just cannot let our schools go with no security.
Wait, when did the Board of Education have that vote?
They had it a couple months ago when they presented their budget to us, which their budget is currently an 8.6% increase or $6.5 million. Out of that $6.5 million, almost $5 million of that is going towards the new addition of special needs students or high needs that are moving in from other towns and especially coming out of Massachusetts. Because Enfield's trying to track, you know, why do we have 50% plus high need students in Enfield?
Are you saying that Enfield has somehow become a magnet? The schools are drawing like you're some kind of big city that has all these resources to throw around?
I don't have the data to back that up, but we definitely need to look into it, because 25% of those students are special education needs. The rest of them are a bunch of other issues that fall under the umbrella of high needs or special needs, mm-hmm. you know, such as behavioral issues, autistic children, children with ADHD, children with disabilities, the 504 students and the IEP students. And this is what really surprised me, is how do you group in children that get free and reduced lunch with children that have been diagnosed with, you know, ADHD or, you know, have a 504 or IEP? Why is the state of Connecticut demanding all these different groups be under the term high needs or special needs? And we really need to look at what's going on, because what's happening is the more students that have these high needs that come to the town, mm-hmm. it takes millions and millions of dollars
sure.
to address these students.
Yeah, it's a big expense.
It's bankrupting the education system in America. Quick story, one student can't get along on a bus, so they just got this student their own bus. This is in Enfield. How much money is that costing? And where is the balance here? Because what about the children that are truly trying? What about the children that really have special needs that can't get the help for their children because there's no money? The state of Connecticut is very clear. The state is a minimum threshold state, which requires the town to invest 4.5% of the average pupil cost into a child's special education. Anything over that, the state of Connecticut is supposed to pick up the tab mandated by the federal government. Now, in Enfield, currently, the state is only funding 69% of that bill, which leaves a shortfall of last year of $600,000. I understand my comments might have been insensitive, and for those of you who felt that way, I'm telling you, I truly apologize. That was not my intent. My intent is we have a huge problem, not only in Enfield, or the state, but the country. And we need to work together to figure out how to move forward.
Because the big problem that you're talking about is that there is an incentive now, I think, for parents, if their kids are lagging behind or appear to have any kinds of issues, they want to get them coded as a special needs kid so they can get their own educational plan and special attention, and that costs the schools a lot of money. But what's happening is it's kind of spinning out of control. The demand for it is so high, and it's getting to be where everybody wants their kid to have that same special attention. Is that the concern?
That's part of it. But the big part of it is there are certain children in communities that the school system cannot provide the adequate resources needed. And those children can cost the municipalities up to $100,000 a school year.
You're talking about where they have to, the kids have such high needs that you or some other town has to ship them out to a special school.
Correct. And Enfield has gone above and beyond trying to create these courses and programs to keep our children in Enfield, to get them the education they need. And is that why people are coming to Enfield with children with special needs? Because we offer more than most? But the problem is, out of the 75 new students that come to Enfield next school year that are already enrolled, you know, it could cost the taxpayers $5 million. And that takes away from the current children that were already falling behind on trying to help these kids and families get what they need.
But Ken, we're talking to Ken Nelson, the mayor of Enfield. How are these kids getting enrolled? Are these families moving to the town, or are these people exercising their right to free movement between school systems somehow?
So it's both. So certain students are moving to town, and out of those 75 children, and this is from the superintendent of schools, most of them are coming out of Massachusetts. So is Connecticut doing a better job dealing with the special needs or high needs? I've got to correct myself because I was, you know, it's no longer called special needs. It's called high needs.
So oh, high needs is now the approved language?
Yes. And, okay. And you know, I was at that meeting. The lady referred to it as special needs. So I don't want to change what I said because I'm not denying what I said in any way, shape, or form. I'm just trying to, you know, explain I'm fighting to keep your children safe. And if we have high needs children in the Enfield school system that pose a danger or a risk to other children in the classroom or the faculty members, and they assault them, they have to be taken out of the school system, whether it's arrested. Our police department and our education system in Enfield is trained beyond belief of how to de-escalate situations. The new SSOs that are coming into the schools, they will be in training all summer on how to deal with this. And for somebody to come up and say that our schools aren't prepared for this or our police department isn't prepared for this, I find it insulting because I know Enfield has spent millions and millions of dollars trying to deal with these students, and better yet, trying to keep them within the town they live in. And that's the end goal. But certain kids with certain special needs are just, we can't fund the program. So we're forced to send them out at $100,000 a student.
So it sounds like there's a structural problem and something has to give, but it sounds also like the state keeps expanding what the mandate is and then doesn't come through with the money. So you guys are left holding the bag on that. And that puts the budget under an enormous stress. And I would guess the ability of the schools to perform under enormous stress.
I mean, you said it perfect. And I know people are upset with me and, you know, they're sending a petition around. Put that much effort with me, and let's go to the state of Connecticut and demand they fund our special education and high needs the way they're supposed to fund it. Help us get the children what they need. Was I frustrated Monday night? Absolutely. And I apologize for that. Unfortunately, when you're sitting up there on the dais, I don't have time to sit back and write out a statement. And, you know, I'm a simple person, and I talk off the cuff. And sometimes things come out a little brash. And again, I apologize to the people who took it that way. But I will tell you, there is a lot of people out there who agree. And something's got to get done about this. And that's what we need to focus on. How do we fix this problem? You have my attention. I'm listening. I've spoken to so many guidance counselors and principals and behavioral specialists throughout the state. They agree with me. But work with me. Work with the school systems. What do we have to do to correct this? Fighting with each other, or, you know, having two council members that lost their seat or their run last November, just take a little piece of what I said and create all this animosity between the people, when most people, when they watch the whole clip, they come back and say, that's not what he said. You're taking it out of context. I'm willing to work with anybody.
All right, so you're saying you want to get people to, instead of using their energy to fight inside the town, to instead focus on the need to get more cooperation and funding that's already required by law from the state.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, the bottom line is we need more people to help. If it takes a teacher and one paraprofessional to deal with one student, what is the cost of that student? So we can't take away from that student. We need more staff. You know, the staff we have now, they're just barely getting by, and they are frustrated. I don't understand why the teachers union president who ran against me in November is now speaking out against me when I'm trying to protect the teachers from the physical assault they have to deal with on a daily basis. You know, I'm trying to give them the tools they need to move Enfield forward. Work with me. Put the politics aside and work with me.
No, and it's a huge problem. All right, so Ken, I feel like you've done what you want to do. You wanted to have a chance to address the controversy. And we're coming to the end of this segment. If you want to stay on longer, you can, but it's up to you. I feel like you've done what you wanted to do today, but if you want to go through some of the remarks specifically and clarify, we can do that. What would you like to do?
That's entirely up to you, Todd. It's your show. But again, from the bottom of my heart, the comments were not meant to hurt people. I'm trying to protect our children in the school. Work with me. Help me make this happen so Enfield is a safe place for our children.
All right, so let's leave it there for today. If you want to talk more next week, we can do that.
Sounds good, Todd. You have a great weekend, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Ken Nelson, mayor of Enfield, clarifying what went on in the meeting this week. Thank you, sir, for being here. We appreciate it. Mark Christopher now is going to fill us in on the ride home. It's a Friday afternoon. Let's see what's going on from the BPS lawyers.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Traffic Center.
Miss something from the Todd Feinberg Show? Don't stress. Listen to the podcast at WTIC.com or on the free Odyssey app.
It's WTIC on a Friday. During the 5 o'clock hour, we'll do Order Up today, because that's what we do on Fridays. We talk about food during the last hour. We've got Doug calling from Windsor. Hi, Doug.
Hey, how you doing? I think part of the controversy with Ken was the suggestion that hitting and abusing two-year-olds is going to help with the school system. And that was what got people fired up. That was the main thing. I didn't really hear him talk too much about that, but all that does is create a cycle of violence. You hit your kids, they're going to hit their kids, they're going to hit their kids. That's just how it works. And I just don't think that's...
A lot of people believe it creates a cycle of violence, but...
It's not a solution to the ankle school system. Start hitting the kids at two. That's just ridiculous.
The way I interpreted that remark that Ken made was that the best thing would be if we hadn't abandoned the idea of having a disciplined society. So, I'm not a proponent of spanking, but I think that's a choice that parents have to be able to exercise, because sometimes maintaining authority and instilling order in a household can be a really difficult thing. But I believe what he was doing was speaking symbolically, that we have a society in which disorder is now being encouraged by the power structure. You've got all this crazy stuff going on in the world now. And the celebration of lawlessness that the government is engaged in with regard to sanctuary cities, sanctuary states, with the idea of just inviting people to roll into the country and without having documents that would justify them having certain privileges, they get the privileges. What's going on is bizarre. The pushing of the transgender stuff onto kids, taking the power away from parents to decide and control their own kids. This is stuff that is, I believe, causing us culturally to spin out of control. And I think that's what Ken was talking about. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he did make a remark as part of those. The caller is correct that he made a remark about two-year-olds not getting spanked, and that I guess that's what the caller is saying caused a lot of the response. 860-522-9842. Well, we're going to get a traffic update. Mark Christopher is there and ready to go, so let's do it. BPS Lawyers Traffic Center. Hey, Mark.
Listen to the Todd Feinberg Show on the free Odyssey app. Download and like WTIC and follow Todd Feinberg today.
It's WTIC. Friday. Order up coming up during the 5 o'clock hour. We did the rants during the first hour. That's how it rolls on Friday. Have you heard of this? I was reading a story about a new restaurant that does the shakes. What do they call them now? The drinks people get in the morning. You know how people get the veggie drinks? Put it in a blender and you make this. Well, that's a big thing now. And they serve bowls. You can tell I don't partake of this. I'm a coffee guy in the morning. But I read this word, which I've seen tons of times, and I always assumed a pronunciation for it. It's spelled A-C-A-I. It's some kind of berry, which I don't know what kind of berry it is, but I wasn't sure how you say that word. And I got a pronunciation online that I wanted to share with you. Well, wait a sec. Yeah, okay. Before I play that, does anyone know how to say this word? A-C-A-I. A-C-A-I. It's a food. It's a berry. And it goes into those bowls and stuff. You know, with the quinoa. Quinoa. That's a popular thing these days. I actually love that stuff. Anyway, so if you know how to say ace, nobody's going to know? Okay. Here's how you say it.
Acai.
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 Acai. That's a word that is said for a certain berry that they sell in these places that serve the bowls.
Acai.
Here it is slow. You ready? They break it down for you.
Acai.
Acai. It sounds like, you know, kind of a kung fu thing. If you know anything about it, feel free to indulge us. All right, I have some things I want to play for you. I'll just start with this one because it's right there in front of me. This is John Stewart talking with Bill O'Reilly. And what's interesting is John Stewart's a really, this is from 10 years ago. John Stewart's a really bright guy. And I think most everyone is really intimidated by him. But guess who else is a really bright guy? Bill O'Reilly, smart guy. Listen to the two of them have a little joust.
You have said, you stated this.
Yeah.
There is no, I don't believe that there's a thing called white privilege.
There is not.
Bill O'Reilly is being challenged by John Stewart over the idea that there's no such thing, according to Bill O'Reilly, as white privilege. And listen what happens.
See, now we have a conversation we can have.
Okay, look, if there's white privilege, then there has to be Asian privilege.
What?
Because Asians make more money than whites.
What?
Already, it's a really good argument, isn't it?
Ooh, you don't know any of this, huh?
Well, not Vietnam. What kind of Asian? You have to
Asian Americans.
Well, no,
Asian Americans.
Depends on where they're from. If you're looking at
they're from Asia. They're Asian Americans.
I understand that.
Good.
But as a
they make more money, higher education, more affluent. So it's Asian privilege, not white privilege.
That you're missing the point. And the
sorry
point,
to confuse you with facts.
You're not. It's not the. That's the. Okay. Here we go. The Asian experience in America, the Asian immigrant experience,
yes,
is very different from the black experience.
Yes.
So it's really, they're not equivalent. And either way.
Now, that was just making noise to give himself time to think. Listen.
The Asian experience in America, the Asian immigrant experience,
yes,
is very different from the black experience.
Yes.
So it's really, they're not equivalent.
Well, that's not a reason why that Bill O'Reilly's wrong to say there's no such thing as white privilege. And listen to what he says next.
And
John Stewart, that is.
And either way, white people, males, set the system. So that's what privilege is that white people set the system.
Now, I never thought about this. If white privilege is that whites rigged the system on their own behalf, then why would it be that Bill O'Reilly is correct, that Asians do better in the white privilege system than white people do? I'll let you hear the whole cut again, because I just think this is a really cool cut. Partly because John Stewart's the one who looks dumber.
You have said, you stated this.
Yeah.
There is no, I don't believe that there's a thing called white privilege.
There is not.
See, now we have a conversation we can have.
Okay, look, if there's white privilege, then there has to be Asian privilege.
What?
Because Asians make more money than whites.
What?
Oh, you don't know any of this, huh?
Well, not
no.
not Vietnam. What kind of Asian? You have to
Asian Americans.
Well, no,
Asian Americans.
Depends on where they're from. If you're looking at
they're from Asia. They're Asian Americans.
I understand that.
Good.
But as a
they make more money, higher education, more affluent. So it's Asian privilege, not white privilege.
That you're missing the point. And the
sorry
point,
to confuse you with facts.
You're not. It's not the. That's the. Okay. Here we go. The Asian experience in America, the Asian immigrant experience,
yes,
is very different from the black experience.
Yes.
So it's really, they're not equivalent. And either way, white people, males, set the system. So that's what privilege is that white people set the system.
It's a, it's a reasonable point to make that because white people controlled the system, they made the rules, so the rules would naturally benefit white people. But what happens in a state like Connecticut, where you have the Democrats, who are the avowed party of racism and race and celebrating underserved communities and underserving underserved communities and tearing down statues that they point at and say are racist, if they control everything in the state of Connecticut, how come they haven't made everything? They haven't created a preference in the law for the underserved communities so that they wouldn't be underserved anymore. Did you ever think about that? If it's possible to advantage a group of people based on skin color, and the Democrats are for people with hues that are a little darker than white people, or a lot darker, because they represent brown people, they say, then why would it not be that those repercussions of the Democrats having total control over the state, why wouldn't it be visible everywhere? Or at least starting to seep in? But the bigger they make the government, I think the more people fall behind who are already behind. The people they claim to are underserved communities who they underserve. 860-522-9842. Isn't that interesting how that happened? Love that cut. Love that cut. Never heard it before. All right, I've got another one here I wanted to play for you, if you don't mind. Nope, played the acai. No, I said it wrong. How do you say it? Acai. Acai. This is John Lennon. Particularly, this I just bumped into. I thought I had heard everything the Beatles had to say, but I think that's impossible. Listen to him. This is just a kind of... this is about how you feel about your own life and yourself, right? You've got John Lennon, one of the great songwriters, maybe one of the greatest songwriters of all time, and in the biggest band of all time. And how does he feel about his own abilities as a guitar player?
We always missed the club days because that's when we were playing music. And then later on, we became technically efficient recording art, which was another thing because we were competent people, you know, and we can, whatever media you put us in, we can produce something worthwhile. You know. I'm okay. I'm not technically very good, but I can make it howl, you know, and move.
So he's saying, I'm not a great guitar player. I'm not technically very good, but I can make it howl, which I think this is a really important point he's making about what matters most as a rock and roll player.
I'm not technically very good, but I can make it howl, you know, and move. I was rhythm guitarist, you know, and it's an important job. I can make a band drive, you know.
How do you rate George?
How would you rate George? John Lennon was asked.
He's pretty good. You know?
He's pretty good, he said. And then he says quickly, but I like my playing better.
I prefer myself, you know, I have to be honest, you know. I mean, I'm really very embarrassed about my guitar playing in one way because it's very poor, you know, I can never move. But I can make a guitar speak. See, one part of me says, yes, of course I can play because I can make a rock move.
Isn't that what it's all about? Forget about, you know, most of us don't know how to play guitar and certainly can't make it speak. But whatever it is you do, isn't that what the job is? Isn't that the gig? If you're doing a job, you want to be able to make the thing sing.
It's very poor, you know, I can never move. But I can make a guitar speak. See, one part of me says, yes, of course I can play, because I can make a rock move, you know. But the other part of me says, well, I wish I could just do it like B.B. King, you know. If you put me with B.B., I'd feel silly, you know. But I can really make I'm an artist, and if you give me a tuba, I'll bring you something out of it.
I just think that's wonderful in terms of the human experience, because everybody is having that wrestling match with themselves, I think. If you're humble and honest, I mean, a lot of people, their egos won't allow them to admit their own fallibility, maybe. But I think that's how an honest person feels, and an introspective person and a humble person. That's how you feel about your own ability to perform. Now, what's unusual about John is that when you get that kind of adulation, people who are driven by insecurities, what they tend to do is build up this huge sense of themselves, this inflated sense of themselves, because that's what the outside world gives them as feedback, and that gives them the prerogative to get an exaggerated sense of self. But I think it's really a testimony to John's greatness that he can talk like that about himself. Dave in Northfield, hi there.
Hello.
You're on the air, Dave. Go ahead.
All I can say is a musician that one thing I always kept in mind is that however good you might get, there's always somebody better.
Isn't that true of everything?
You play your music to have fun, and that's all I ever did.
I did. But you must have been trying to get better at it at the same time, right?
Well, of course, yeah. But the more you play, the better you get.
Yeah. Do you still play?
It took a little bit of a sabbatical after having some surgery, but I'm getting back to it again.
That's good. What instrument do you play?
Guitar and harmonica.
Does it get harder as you age?
Well, a harmonica, I've been playing that for a long time. And, before my surgery, it was getting harder because I was running out of breath. And now I'm renewed.
Really? Because that was, you know, the few times I messed around with a harmonica, I was amazed at how much gusto it took to keep it filled with sound. It's amazing.
Well, I had big lungs, so I've always been good at wind stuff. Oh. And by the way, I mean, it doesn't matter what I pick up. Give me 20 minutes, I'll play it.
Wow, that's great. I wish I was able to do that.
Not good, but I can crank something out.
But you could make it speak.
Yeah.
Like John Lennon
said.
Have
fun with it. Thank you.
Yeah, that's great. All right, Dave, appreciate hearing from you.
Yep.
Take care. 860-522-9842. So 5 o'clock hour is coming up. That is our, it's hard to believe, Friday last hour. That's our food hour. It's called Order Up. And the idea is for us to, I'll throw some questions at you and we'll just hear your answers or whatever those questions inspire in you. And we talk about it and have some fun, and it kind of is a transition hour out of the serious stuff that we sometimes talk about into the more fun and festive and just sharing together to send us off into the weekend and, you know, put everyone in a good mood as you head off to have dinner or to the store to pick stuff up so you can cook dinner, whatever. So we'll do that coming up after news. 860-522-9842, rant line number 751-4698. Let us check in now. BPS Lawyers Traffic Center with Mark Christopher. Hey, sir.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.